Thank you, Simon. And now our final speaker before we go to Q&A is Rachel Mays. Rachel has spent over 15 years within UK government and Parliament developing and evaluating science and technology policy within the House of Lords, the IFRS Chief Scientist's Office, the Government Office for Science, and within the Technology Strategy and Security Team in DSIT. And most recently, she led the development of the UK government's National Quantum Strategy. It's great to have Rachel here with us, and please welcome her to the screen. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I'm really sorry that I can't be with you today in person. I was hoping to be, but for personal reasons, was not able to. So I have the honour of summing up and really sort of setting the context for the Q&A session. So I'm just going to run through the sort of a lot of things that have already been talked about today in terms of the quantum programme activities, how we've got to where we are today, and some of the key things that we're planning to do within government over the coming months. So just wondering if my slides will come up on here or if I need to share them. But maybe I'll get talking anyway. Great, thank you. So in terms of the quantum program, I think you've already heard an awful lot about it, so I'll try and skim over this bit just to save a bit of time. So the quantum program's been going for about 10 years now. It comes to a close this year. And as we've already heard, over that period, we've spent about £1 billion across various activities, from funding the quantum hubs, which bring together industry and academia around technology development, as well as doctoral training center activities in quantum. We also have the Quantum for Fundamental Physics program out of SDFC. In terms of the quantum activity, program activities, as I've said, so we have activities across research, innovation. So you've heard about the Challenge program, where we funded about 180 companies and around 180 million of funding to innovate through the projects that you've heard about from Simon. Alongside this, we have key bits of infrastructure, such as the National Quantum Computing Center, which is due to open this year, which is really looking to help scale quantum computing and look at adoption and readiness within the program. And you've heard a lot already about the National Physical Laboratory and their testing and assurance work through the National Metrology Laboratory and the doctoral training centres. And just to remind you, the quantum programme has been going now for a long time and has great partnerships across the people that make up the programme, which includes DSTL, NPL, DSIT, the MOD, GCHQ, and various parts of UKRI. So in terms of what has this achieved, actually the program's had great successes so far, many of which you've heard about already. So we've first in Europe for world-leading research and third globally for the quality and impact of research. We're also second in the world for the number of quantum companies. And also second in attracting private investment into the country. And as Simon has already alluded to, actually we're building on really broad industrial and academic capabilities across computing, communication, sensing, timing, imaging, and have a very vibrant supply chain in the UK. So we knew that the programme was coming to an end in 2024, so towards the end of 2022, we started to plan for the new quantum program in government and across the partners, and really to start thinking about you know, what fits around the program, recognizing this global competition and growth that we were witnessing and the need really to maintain that global position that we have in the UK. So the quantum program, the quantum strategy is focused on a number of pillars, and it really builds on the success of the program, but looks to then gap fill and thinking about scaling, as we've talked about today. So to really start to progress some of the challenges that we've been talking about. So the first pillar is just to continue to fund world-leading science and develop the skill set. The second one is around addressing these scale-up challenges and helping businesses to grow. And then the third one is around adoption and really creating that pull and focus on societal benefits. And then the last pillar really is on supporting innovation and the ethical use of quantum through international regulatory frameworks. I think what we've heard a lot about today is that there are many potential applications for quantum technologies. They aren't just one technology, they're a suite of technologies that have many benefits and opportunities, but that in itself represents a challenge. So what we try to focus on in government is making sure that we have clear trajectories towards areas of high impact. And as Francis mentioned, we did that through the development of 5 quantum missions. So towards the end of 2023, we published these missions, which were developed in collaboration with the community. And they focus on achieving key technological milestones, such as achieving scalable quantum computing or networked systems in the UK, as well as key application areas for sensing that Melissa's already touched on. So one around getting quantum sensors into the health system, one around position, navigation and timing, and another around quantum sensors for critical national infrastructure. You may have already heard that government has its own missions. We are also looking at the value that quantum can bring to government's missions, be that economic growth, where we think that quantum will play a really important role, and government has signalled that it sort of sees the importance of quantum and will continue to support it moving forwards. But quantum also has value to the other government missions around an NHS fit for the future, taking back our streets, and building a Britain, making Britain a clean energy superpower. So what have we focused on so far, and what are the challenges that we're going to face in the future, just to sort of set the context a bit more? As Francis mentioned, we have committed to funding 5 new hubs that actually fit very well with the quantum missions, so 2 of which are in Scotland. So we have the Quantum Networks Hub, Position Navigation Timing in Edinburgh and Glasgow. Then we have Sensing, Imaging and Timing in Birmingham, Biomedical Sensing in London, and Quantum Computing in Oxford. And as with the last set of hubs, these will be really partnerships and delivering a programme of work across a number of leading academic institutions across the UK. We've also established 5 new doctoral training centres and run competitions around networking and PNT, as well as European projects. And the National Quantum Computing Centre, which is due to open shortly, has established its testbed programme, which will enable access to 7 different quantum computing platforms, and they already have an extensive Spark program. So just looking ahead to the future, as you can imagine, we are in the midst of a spending review. So this is a big challenge that we are currently trying to navigate, and that is looking at, what does 1 year versus multi-year spending activity look like for quantum. And we are also in the middle of really thinking about the next steps for the infrastructure review. So the Royal Academy of Engineering produced a very helpful report. As Francis said, it's really the start of the conversation, and we'll be doing community engagement just to better understand the crossover of those requirements for infrastructure across quantum, but also how it marries to semiconductor, telecoms, AI or other critical technologies. So we are in the process of doing that internally in government, and we'll be coming out and doing community engagement to just do deeper dives into specific strategic application areas. We're also due to receive the Skills Task Force's report in the near future, and that really has been over a year's worth of work with a lot of people within the community who have started to really get to grips with the skills needs beyond PhD, as we've talked about today. So what are the technical skills we need? How do we bring in skills from other sectors? How do we upskill and transfer people across? So we will be really using those evidence bases to build our activities within the spending review.